Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 169. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with Security News Writer Alex Khalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob. Always good to be here.
Alex, we've got a couple things to discuss, the biggest of which is the Senate Committee on Intelligence hearing this week on the SolarWinds attacks and investigations. There were some interesting bits of information that trickled out of that hearing, and we have some thoughts on what took place on Tuesday. That's right. Yes, it was Wednesday or Tuesday afternoon, and we are recording this on February 25th, Thursday. And a lot's happened this week. So we were going to talk about the Senate hearing, but I wanted to mention before we get into that part of the podcast, there was another bit of news this week that was important and is tied in with a big ongoing story in InfoSec that has spanned several years. And it is none other than the Shadow Brokers affair. There was a new development there. Checkpoint Software Technologies, their research team, put out a really interesting report on Monday morning that looked at an NSA exploit that was contained in the Shadow Brokers, one of the Shadow Brokers dumps of NSA cyber weapons and hacking tools. This particular dump was released in 2017, but Checkpoint researchers, lo and behold, discovered that this particular exploit and a companion exploit were cloned, were obtained by a Chinese APT, APT-31, that is believed to be a major nation state Chinese intelligence connected hacking outfit, also known as Zirconium. And this exploit, the EPME, or EPME, I don't know. How were you pronouncing it, Alex? I was just saying EPME.
EPME? Yeah, that sounds about right. EPME part is definitely, yeah. I think you got it right.
And this was a sort of a, I don't want to say, it was a sort of a secondary tier cyber weapon exploit that was in the Equation Group, aka NSA, set of hacking tools, cyber weapons, zero-day exploits, whatever you want to call it. And this particular one had it was a Windows flaw. It involved a local privilege escalation, which means that you can't just it's not a remote code execution flaw. It's not the most dangerous, but it was still pretty bad. And the Checkpoint researchers had discovered that this was out in the wild prior to that Shadow Brokers dump in 2017. I believe they first tracked it in 2014. It was used in some attacks in the wild, including an attack on a major U.S. company and government contractor, defense contractor, Lockheed Martin. And now there's questions about, how did China get this? Did China pick this up from an attack that the NSA or Equation Group had launched on a foreign target? Did Chinese threat actors get inside the Equation Group servers, which we know now were maybe weren't the most secure places on the internet, because the Shadow Brokers got in and stole those weapons and published them? So there's a lot of questions about what's going on there, and fascinating story. We'll be keeping an eye on it. Alex, it was your first foray into the Shadow Brokers, and I apologize because it's a wild story, educational, I hope.
For sure. It was this story is interesting because the idea of a cloned exploit is I'm guessing it's nothing new, but it's also it's interesting in the context of it coming from an NSA associated threat actor, which, by the way, I'll touch on that in a second. But well, and then the idea that there was one of the exploits were patched silently.
Yes.
By Microsoft, which I know you'll want to get into in a second. But as the Shadow Brokers and Equation Group thing were both new to me, those were kind of the quote-unquote funnest parts of writing this story. The Equation Group, like, I never considered that we have our own threat actors in America, which is kind of, I mean, it's not wild, like, logically. Not saying it should be the case, but logically it makes a lot of sense that there would be someone describable as a threat actor. And how they're responsible for WannaCry. not directly, not, necessarily, right, but
indirectly. They developed the exploits, or at least found the zero day, the Windows zero day, and the SMB protocol that made the Eternal Blue exploit, and the Eternal Blue exploit was later, you know, once it was published by the Shadow Brokers, picked up by threat actors and used for WannaCry. So the story gets into, just sort of the unintended consequences of, you know, hoarding zero days, developing exploits for offensive hacking through nation state hacking outfits, whether it's the U.S. or whoever, and how when those things are used in the wild, there's nothing preventing an adversary or an opposing nation state outfit from picking up that exploit and re-weaponizing it, for lack of a better term. So it's wild. And yeah, there are all sorts of questions about how China got in and why these exploits didn't get more attention at the time, how they were sort of patched, and one of them, the one for EPMO, the companion exploit, was silently patched. There's a lot of questions. Looking forward to new developments in this one, let me just say. Yeah. So.
Yeah. The Shadow Brokers, how they exposed their role is how they exposed Equation Group in 2016, 2017. And that was another amazing part of learning about this story. This hacking group, which sounds way more interesting than Anonymous ever did. How they're named after Mass Effect DLC, and how one of their dumps had a 4chan meme as its password. And just the idea of, like, seeing this Equation Group, a threat actor, working offensively with the U.S. government is so interesting, because it makes me think about the idea of cyber war and the potential for cyber war crimes.
Yes.
Which is like, that's probably a discussion that could take forever, and I know we can't do that today, but just the implications of a threat actor working on behalf of our country, who whatever you want to say about the government, like, you want to think of your own country as the good guys, and I'm sure every country thinks of their own country as the good guys, and just to think of us having our own threat actors, it's like, it's a very weird feeling.
I'm sure they had good intentions. But I mean, to your point, though, the cyber war aspect, I mean, that is a good opportunity and a good segue to transition to the SolarWinds Senate hearing, because, the big headline to me that was the basis for your story was how not just that. It seemed the attribution to Russian nation state, a threat actor, threat group, a GRU connected hacking unit, that case has sort of, or that allegation, I guess, has picked up steam. It seems like that case is building momentum, even if we don't know all the details. But I guess let's start with the Russia aspect. Before we get into Russia, Alex, let me ask you, as someone who's probably as disillusioned with government and Congress as I am, what was your take on the overall hearing, I guess, not just the statements from the panel members? We should note it was, let me see if I have this correct. It was Brad Smith, president of Microsoft. Mm-hmm. It was Kevin Mandia of FireEye.
Yeah.
It was George Kurtz, CEO of CrowdStrike. And it was
Sudhakar.
Yes, that's right. Ramakrishna from SolarWinds. That's right.
Yeah.
The new CEO, the guy who just had gotten the job a few days before this all broke in December. Poor guy. But what'd you think? You know, what'd you think of the committee? Hearing how it was conducted and just overall impressions.
Yeah. This thing was slightly disappointing. I mean, it was my first time paying attention to a 2-hour Senate hearing for this site. I mean, we've touched on things like this before, but usually it's after the fact. Usually I can skip around the video, or there's already like things we know that we don't even need to watch it other than gathering quotes. But this was the first one that I paid full attention to. And it was a little disappointing because I was kind of hoping for a more definitive attribution to Russia, which we didn't get, although we're almost there, it feels like.
Pretty close.
It did. So I'm still at the point where I know, compared to, let's say, my parents or one of my siblings, I know way more about cybersecurity than they do. But I do treat myself as a baseline for the people who are talking about this who aren't cybersecurity people but should know about this. Sure. Say the senators, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep, I know where you're going.
Did they do at least as much research as I would have done to write this story, considering they have their implications are greater? Now, I know their fingers are in a bunch of different sort of pots, right? So they can't be experts on every single subject, and I don't expect them to. But I would hope that if you're a senator talking about a cybersecurity issue that involves the U.S. government getting hacked on some still undetermined level from our perspective, that you would at least read the news stories, that you would at least read a press release here and there, see what the company says, that literally, you could learn a lot about SolarWinds and be qualified to ask good questions within 3 or 4 hours of research, maybe even less than that. And I think some of the senators up there, names are escaping me, but there are a good number of them. And I would say most of the people who talked that day, they at least read a few good news stories. They were asking earnest questions, even if they weren't always the most extremely relevant or had the best answers. Like, it was about what I would expect and hope for. Some of the senators, or at least one or two, were like, it doesn't even feel like they read more than a single news story in passing. And they were asking questions like, when are we going to get Russia? Like, Alex. A few minutes after someone Alex. Said, we think it's Russia. Yes, Rob.
I got to tell you, I love what you're saying, but I got news for you. It's all downhill from here. I agree largely with what you said. I guess my perspective on this differs. I've covered a lot of these hearings. I've covered some really long ones. I got to tell you, this was one of the, I think, better ones in terms of the committee members being prepared with some good questions. And to your point, not always getting sort of the language or the details right, but at least like you felt like they had read a little bit about it and tried to prepare. And some of the questions, I mean, look, Ron Wyden is sort of in a class by himself, I would say, in terms of tech acumen and being up to speed on technology and internet related issues. He's outstanding. He's got a great staff. But even like Mark Warner, Marco Rubio, the co-chairs of the committee, I felt like they had good questions. They had done some homework, and other members too. But I got to tell you, like, if you thought that was not great, there, just brace yourself for some truly bad ones, because there will be some that I'm unfortunately going to stick you with, and you're just going to be like, these people should be fired on the spot. How do they even get elected?
Yeah.
They're going to go on non sequiturs. They're going to grandstand. They're going to have no clue what they're talking about. And it's going to feel like they're at a different hearing than the one that you are watching. And it's going to be maddening. And I just want to prepare you for that. But yeah, definitely some folks in there could have done better in terms of figuring out good questions to ask the members on the panel instead of sort of politicking or sort of exposing their ignorance. So,
yeah, but despite the people who are hired to represent us, which I'm not even an extremely, maybe I should be a more cynical political guy. I'm still not completely cynical in that department. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm still, I still consider myself a fairly non-cynical guy, but there was some good stuff from the people who were actually being interviewed.
Yeah.
Shout out to FireEye CEO Kevin Mandia, MVP of this one.
He was really good, yep.
And the 60 Minutes thing we criticized, he was the good part.
Yes.
He was good, sort of adding a lot of context. He had my favorite one of my favorite quotes about the Russian attribution.
Yes.
We can get into that.
Go for it.
Okay. Yeah. So there were three comments from the people interviewed that I found of the four executives interviewed. CrowdStrike said, "We don't have any information to corroborate Russia being likely, but we haven't seen anything that goes against those sort of light accusations," which is basically them saying nothing. Which is whatever. They need to do what they need to do.
Yeah.
Maybe that's probably accurate, and they're probably just telling the truth at that moment. But Brad Smith, Microsoft president, chief legal officer, said, "At this stage, we've seen substantial evidence that points to the Russian Foreign Intelligence Agency, and we have found no evidence that leads us anywhere else." Mm. We'll wait for the rest of the formal steps to be taken by the government and others, but there's not a lot of suspense at the moment in terms of what we're talking about. Now, the use of not a lot of suspense, no evidence that leads us anywhere else, it basically sounds like he's saying, look, it's Russia. We can't say it's Russia yet because the investigation is still technically ongoing, but also come on. It's like, that's my personal interpretation of that. And then Mandia said, he said a lot, and I think his comments are worth sort of going into further if you're interested in looking at the thing on C-SPAN, which we do link to in our article. But sort of one piece of that which I liked was he gave a little more context sort of supporting that Smith quote, where he said, "We went through all the forensics. It is not very consistent with cyber espionage from China, North Korea, or Iran, and it is most consistent with cyber espionage and behaviors we've seen out of Russia," he said. And that sort of I think it was also him who's providing a lot of context with how threat actor attribution is made, which I thought was like, even though it wasn't the most important, it was my favorite part of that whole thing, where he was talking about how there's a lot of pattern recognition in terms with like how things are attributed with, okay, here's the stuff they're going after. Here's how they're doing it. Mm-hmm. Here's what they're like doing. And then based on that kind of information, they start to then begin making their deductions, which I thought was so interesting because I never really knew how that stuff worked. Podcasts are places for editorializing. So I will say this about the thing. The reason why I say Mandia was the all-star here and Smith wasn't is that Smith's kind of talked a very surface level. Yeah. And he's talking to senators, so you kind of have to. But Mandia gave me the impression that he really knew his stuff compared to everyone else there.
He does. I mean, his background, his, you know, previous public appearances or speaking engagements or just interviews, like he knows his stuff. And you're right. Like he provided a layer of detail that was not, I don't think others really got into. I mean, George Kurtz had some really interesting things to add to the discussion as well. But Mandia, it was just, you know, like you said, the attribution case and what it involves. I mean, just going back to the Shadow Broker stuff, if it was just sort of like, oh, they used this malware and this malware originated in this country, so therefore it was this country. I mean, you can't do that. I mean, once it's in the wild, anybody can pick it up. You have to really, really drill down into patterns of behavior and techniques and just little nuances in how a hack or a breach was conducted to get to the bottom of it. And then for the government, I mean, the government has to supplement this technical information with like real human intelligence. What have you heard on the ground? Like what do our quote unquote spies, for lack of a better term, what have they been hearing? What have they been seeing? Is there any chatter overseas about, you know, the GRU or GRU affiliated units trying to pull off a supply chain hack or get some type of access to the government pre, you know, Biden being sworn in or whatever. That said, certainly seems, based on this hearing, and I should note this is the second Senate hearing that they've had on this. The previous one was a closed door hearing that was not open to the public because it was closed door. This is the second one. It seems that the case for the case against Russia in these SolarWinds attacks is being firmed up. It's gaining momentum, and it seems unlikely to me that it's going to crumble at a later date and that we're suddenly going to reverse some of these early conclusions or educated guesses or whatever you want to call them. I mean, it seems like there's technical evidence there pointing to Russia. We don't have all the details yet, but
it sounds like my guess is they already know it's Russia, like in a, let's say, a rational level based on overwhelming evidence. But in the same way, investigations, especially on that level, need to be so thorough and then stack whatever invisible bureaucracy on top of that. It's probably just we need to wait until this date when they do the things that they have to do in every single case like this, and then we can move forward. The sort of attribution thing was also very interesting, too, because it made me think back to the book I read on the dark web, The Darkest Web, by Eileen Ormsby, where she was discussing how detective work occurs on the dark web, where there's encryption, etc., and just with all of the technical know-how that's that goes into something like the dark web or a security breach. I think you can make a very security, privacy, infosec, it's all parts of the same coin, most likely, or I would argue, but it's good old-fashioned detective work. When all else fails, you look at the information you have, and you make deductions, and you do detective work. And it's just interesting to think of, like, the modern age we live in now, the same techniques people have probably been using for hundreds of years, just in a modern context, is all it is. I mean, yeah. Obviously, there's like, actual, sort of, let's say, technology that helps.
For sure.
But at its core, it's the same thing we've always been doing.
Yeah. CSI Cyber. I kid. Yeah, and in addition to the finger pointing, the sort of the growing momentum toward blaming Russia, a state-sponsored APT for this, there were a couple other important points from this hearing that we should discuss before wrapping up here. The big one of these secondary points is Amazon. Mm-hmm. And how Amazon did not participate in this hearing, and there had been some chatter about how the threat actors had used Amazon Cloud Services for whatever various command and control infrastructure for the attack. The Senate committee had invited Amazon Web Services to participate in the hearing, and they declined. And I think we can say that the members of the committee were not happy with this at all.
Yeah. Mr. Senator Marco Rubio, he was one of the most vocal, I would say, of the senators, though multiple senators, as us journalists would say, slammed Amazon on this. Yeah. He said, we'd extended an invitation to Amazon to participate. The operation we'll be discussing today uses their infrastructure, at least in part, but apparently they were too busy to discuss that here with us today. And I hope they'll reconsider that in the future, which he didn't say it like that.
Oh, no.
But his words very much implied that tone.
He was upset. There were other members of the committee that were upset. There were other members of the committee. And I can't recall exactly which senator it was, but it might have been actually a couple of them who had said, you know, we'll have to look at other ways to get them to the table, to get them to participate in this. And that, you know, presumably means a subpoena to someone at Amazon, to someone within AWS. I don't know that for sure. It certainly seems like that is the case, and that tracks with sort of previous congressional hearings of this nature that are sometimes adversarial. The thing to note here is, and we discussed this offline, Alex, is it is not unusual at all for threat actors to use free or just cheap cloud services within the United States, whether it's Microsoft, whether it's Google, whether it's AWS, and to use that infrastructure to host phishing links, to launch complex malware attacks, to do a number of different things. It is not unusual at all. It happens all the time. It's been a problem for many years in terms of how easy it is for these guys to sort of pretend to be legitimate customers and to get onto these platforms and abuse them. Now, we don't know the details or the particulars of how the threat actors use this stuff. It seems like they just used it for basic command and control. Once the Sunburst malware was installed via these poisoned updates, that they made a call back to an Amazon Web Services, an AWS account, you know, some resource online somewhere, communicated with that resource and was able to activate. Obviously not good, but it's not something that is unheard of. And depending on the particulars of how this was done, we can't, I don't think anyone's in a position at this point to say whether or not Amazon's internal security measures or security team should or maybe shouldn't have been able to catch that activity and stop it. So it's a little bit up in the air at this point.
But yeah, it was interesting to me, just this whole AWS thing, because I, like, in the original version of this story, I wasn't going to include it until we talked about it, and it was one of, like, I watched the session, but it just, I was like, why do they need Amazon here? And then we talked about it, and yeah. What was so interesting to me was, I've written several thousand words about SolarWinds in the last 2 or 3 months, right? A couple hours of podcasts on top of that. And this was something that, like, I know it had been discussed a little bit beforehand.
Yeah.
But it totally slipped under my radar. And it didn't really feel like a story until this thing. To the point where I was like, why are they even talking about Amazon? Like, all the big players are already here. But it sounds like this could be a tease for what's to come.
Yeah, I hope Amazon makes some sort of statement or issues a report or a disclosure of some type that basically says, yes, we, you know, these resources were used. They appeared to be legitimate cloud accounts. We didn't see the communications because, you know, maybe it was encrypted traffic. Maybe, you know, there's a number of reasons why this stuff slips under the radar. And it might've been Mandia who said, well, the reason they did this is because they wanted to blend in, and this is the best way to do it. And it's not, you know, it happens all the time. Like, I this isn't excusing Amazon. Maybe there was something that they should have caught about this activity, but it seems like the committee is not going to let go of this. So I do wonder what's going to happen, if there's going to be a hearing in a couple of weeks where they compel Amazon to come forward and participate and sort of explain what happened. I don't know.
Mm.
It's interesting, but, you know, that ties in with the second point. I think it was Richard Burr brought up the comment about, well, this is a problem because we, the U.S. government, the NSA, Department of Defense, whatever, intelligence community, we don't surveil our own networks, our own cloud, which is a lie, by the way. That's not true. So we can't see them if they're launching their attacks from inside the United States, and that's a problem. And two things stood out about that. Number one, that was eerily similar, and so were other points of discussion from the members of the committee, to the 60 Minutes episode that we mentioned earlier. The 60 Minutes episode that sort of advocated hacking back against Russia and talked about sort of the problem that the NSA, you know, we don't have any visibility into our, you know, to US-based companies and US-based networks and cloud providers. Again, lie. Come on, stop that. But I now am pretty convinced that 60 Minutes episode was very purposeful, in the sense that the sources for it were trying to lay the groundwork for. I don't know if it's going to go in a direction of, hey, we need to bring back, you know, the going dark issue, and we need to compel cloud providers and network, you know, operators and telecoms to sort of voluntarily give us their information and let us, you know, analyze and surveil their networks. I don't know to what end, but this just seemed, the overlap between the comments there and the interviews in that episode were just way, way, way too similar to me to think that it was just a coincidence. That what I think probably happened is the committee members or other members of the government sort of had developed these talking points and put them out to people in private industry, and that's what produced the 60 Minutes episode in advance of sort of hearings like this, where they were going to discuss this stuff. You know, what are we going to do to Russia, and why don't we have visibility into our own sort of infrastructure and networks? So
yeah, It's a great time to remind everyone that 60 Minutes is an entertainment program.
Yeah, it's that was a rough episode, but yeah, I wonder what, like, it, you know, we were watching that hearing and it started to sort of toward the end get into areas like, you know, we need visibility and encryption's a problem and things like that, and like Richard Burr just sort of, you know, going at it with Ron Wyden back and forth. It just, it started to go off the rails a little bit into other areas. But I do think it sort of indicated, well, we may be looking at sort of changes in policy or potential policy proposals, whether it's from the administration, whether it's from members of the Senate or Congress, about, number one, what are we going to do here? How are we going to respond? We need to get tough. And how are we going to do it? And then also, how do we prevent something like this from happening again with somebody just spinning up an Amazon account and attacking, you know, the supply chain, which, again, happens all the time. I'm glad they're sort of finally clued into this type of activity. But like, this isn't like a novel technique by any stretch of the imagination. So,
yeah, I think there's let's say a good future podcast that we can totally devote to hacking back once we know if that's the actual plan the government has going. Like, here's the thing. We're missing so much information that I'm guessing the higher powers that be may already have.
True.
That it's hard for, I mean, me especially as an outsider, but I think in many cases to criticize, like, I don't think I have enough information to make a judgment about the hacking back, because if it's Russia, then we gotta know, like, what's their goal? Do they know that beyond intelligence gathering? What do they plan to do with that information?
Right.
And then what does hacking back mean?
Yeah.
Like, are they attacking critical infrastructure? Are they just pulling large-scale, expensive pranks to show that the U.S. is powerful? Mm-hmm. Like, what's gonna happen here? And I want to say, like, something about hacking back, but I don't think we know enough. And I think we will know enough someday. It's not right now.
Yeah, and I think there's probably going to be some at a point in the near future where there is going to be a non-hacking back sort of, this is our response, and this is, you know, whether it's sanctions, whether it's trying to hold members of that hacking unit criminally accountable and identifying them. That, I have no doubt, is coming. I guess the question is whether it's going to go next level, so to speak, and we'll see. Like you said, there's information that is about this attack that we're obviously not privy to. It's still very much up in the air about what the big picture threat and capability was of this campaign beyond intelligence gathering, if there was an additional motive or capability there, you know. So we'll see. But we'll see. Yeah. We're going to get more Senate hearings, Alex, I can tell you that. And
yes!
I got to just brace yourself. If you thought this one was a little rough, it's going to get a lot rougher. It's going to get – you are just going to be – let me put it this way. I look forward to watching you work this out in just frantic Slack messages to me as these hearings are going on, and just like virtually tearing your hair out through sort of instant messaging. I kind of look forward to it. I'm going to be there. I'm going to help you work through it. I just want to let you know I've done my share of these, and I'm here. I will be there to offer moral support, but I also am going to be probably entertained by it as well. So
So yeah, yep. you're gonna make me as cynical as you. Yep. Making me watch Top Gun and Predator.
Yes.
I'm gonna be a mini Rob in like 2 years.
Yeah, we don't need to go that far, but yeah. yeah, but we will obviously be continuing to cover this, the Solar Winds attacks and whatever sort of government hearings and actions take place as we move forward in the months ahead and probably years, to be quite honest. So Alex, thank you as always for joining me on this discussion.
Of course, Rob. Thanks.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.